Tuesday, November 4th, the day before Election Day 2019, Marilyn Moore stopped by the show in the 3 o'clock hour. She, of course, running a write-in campaign for mayor of Bridgeport against incumbent Democrat Joe Ganim and Republican John Rodriguez. We welcomed Brian Lockhart from the Connecticut Post and Hearst Connecticut Media to the show to talk about the mayor's race. And in the 5 o'clock hour, Joseph Kolb joined us. He talked about his new book regarding teen and gang violence in America.
You're listening to Connecticut Today with Paul Pacelli on WICC 600.
Yeah, that's us. Hey, how are you? The phone number is always, you know it, 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. It's our number two of our daily four-hour get-together. We're here for you every Monday through Friday from 2 p.m. to 6 p.m. We know you have choices out there, and when you pick us, we are very happy with that. Thank you so much. Paul Pacelli here, Aaron Johnson on the other side of the glass. You out there listening, we thank you for checking us out at WICC600.com and on the radio. And rather online at WICC600.com and on the air at WICC600. All right, coming up later today, we'll talk about gang violence. At 3:30, Brian Lockhart joins us from Hearst Connecticut Media and the Connecticut Post. But joining us right now, Bridgeport Democratic State Senator Marilyn Moore. It is the eve of the election. She is posing as a write-in candidate against the incumbent mayor, Bridgeport Mayor Joe Ganim, and Republican John Rodriguez. Marilyn, Paul here at WICC. How are you?
I'm good, Paul. How are you?
I'm good. How is the before we get into the particulars of the court ruling the other day, how's the campaign been going so far?
Well, we're still energized. We've been out today. I was out at some local places talking to people in the community. It's very positive response. We had a very positive response on Saturday and had a fundraiser yesterday in Black Rock. So people are excited.
You know, Marilyn, a lot of people said when you went the route of a write-in campaign, a lot of people said, well, yeah, but you know, Mike Jarjura was able to pull that off because he was an incumbent. Everybody knew who he was. Marilyn's going to have to spend a ton of money on advertising this and the other. I guess you're not agreeing with that.
No, you know what? I think we just needed to spend a lot of time in the community. I am a state senator for 5 years. I've lived here my entire life. I've run a nonprofit helping women with breast cancer. More people know me than the party thinks knows me. And the response at the door has been so positive with people who I did not know that there's been enough publicity about this campaign and about the election and the absentee ballot that all that has lifted my name up an awful lot, more than I ever thought about. And, you know, I said I'm not going to dumb it down and think that people aren't smart enough to write in more when they don't have someone to select that they think that can really run the city and not be involved in some of the corruption. And that's what I'm getting from the community, and that's what I'm getting when I knock on doors.
What did you think of the court decision, what Judge Stevens did yesterday? I know you were not directly, Marilyn, tied to that court action. It was filed on behalf of three other plaintiffs here. But what did you think of the outcome, and more precisely, what did you think of what the judge said regarding his observations on the whole absentee ballot issue?
Well, you know, I think that there should have been some type of sanction for what happened. It seemed like everybody walked away and they thought they were free of any wrongdoing. And I kind of saw that when I saw people from the party, Democratic Party, in a video in front of City Hall cheering that they had won. Nobody won. Anytime you take advantage of the voter and you do anything fraudulent, like dealing with the absentee ballots, nobody's a winner. This is about the voters, and if the voters have not had a fair shot at deciding who they want to have for mayor, there's nothing to celebrate. So I know they were having today, they were going back into court. They upped it to the Supreme Court today, but, you know, from the day that we lost the primary to absentee ballots, I just said I'm moving forward and I'm going to go for it with a write-in. I think that I can't let the voters down. I promised some people I would be on the ballot in November, and it was important for me to just move forward. And all of our energy has really been on a write-in vote. It's not been on the court case at all. I just move forward to where we need to be and learn from the mistakes that we've made in the past to move us to November 5th.
How, Marilyn Moore, did you approach getting out there in the campaign, knowing that you would have to have your name written in, which sounds simple, but again, you're dealing from a point to where your name is not printed on the ballot, so you have to tell people, I guess, A, don't forget, you can write me or write a person in. Were a lot of people, Marilyn, surprised by that or not?
No, you know, I had more people saying, what do we put in? Do we have to put in Marilyn Moore? How does it have to appear? And I've said to them, you know, there's a place on the ballot that says write in. You just drop down to that line. You can write in more, M-O-O-R-E, fill in the bubble and write in more. And that's going to be sufficient. The misinformation was they were going to have to spell my name perfectly. And there was a time when we were thinking about just doing M-M until the party found someone to run with the initials MM. And those shenanigans just keep lifting my profile. The more that they seem to do to try to undermine a fair election, the deeper they go into a hole of people who don't want to vote for this nonsense. And I just read in the Connecticut Post this morning that Mario Testo said, if I win, he's going to resign as town chair. I think that's enough for people to get out and vote. If we're going to get rid of him, that's a good reason to go out and vote and have a clean slate of people who really want to do the right thing for Bridgeport.
Are you concerned, Marilyn, that is there any concern or worry on your part that a lot of these ballots or a part of them with the write-in, with people attempting to write in your name, might be contested in any way, maybe more than usual?
Well, I have an attorney. Max Medina is going to be reviewing the absentee ballots that come in tomorrow. So we have some oversight. And we will be watching very clearly. We have attorneys who will be here tomorrow throughout the city who will be watching, who will be guiding people to make sure that it's done the correct way. We have people who will be standing outside the polls, directing people on how to do the write-in. We have a couple of ways of demonstrating to people that it's not a difficult process. You know, I was just in Stop and Shop up in Main Street mm-hmm. handing out some bags to people.
Yeah.
And people were saying, when I said, do you know how to do a write-in ballot? And they said, of course I do. And I said, well, what would you do? And they said, I'm going to bubble and write in more. I know. So, you know, I'm not dumbing down the residents of Bridgeport. I think they know. And I think there's been enough information in the media. And we've done a mailing to 22,000 people in the city of Bridgeport to let them know how to do a mail-in. I think we got this.
Marilyn Moore is the guest, Democratic State Senator, who lost the eventual final count of the Democratic mayoral primary on September 10th, but the regular election is tomorrow. She is running as a write-in candidate. Marilyn, what's the before we take a break here, what is the overriding message that you are hearing from the people of Bridgeport as you stay on the campaign trail?
I didn't say this. This is what they have said. Joe has to go. They're tired. And I get a lot of this from people who have lived in Bridgeport a long time and have not seen the change. And I believe that as long as these people get out to the polls and people really go to the polls the way we've heard in the community, then we're going to be the winners on Tuesday at 8 o'clock when the polls close.
Coming up to 17 past 3, a few more minutes we will spend here with Marilyn Moore. Bridgeport Democratic State Senator actually represents a district encompassing Bridgeport, parts of Trumbull and other towns. She is pushing a write-in campaign for mayor of the city. Of course, the election is being held tomorrow. Marilyn, back to you. Obviously, whomever wins, whatever city or town Marilyn in, and you've been in state government for so long, the thing is we want people, no matter what town they're in, to get out and vote tomorrow.
That's right. And, you know, people use this, you know, people have died for us to vote, but people have really died. And people, a lot of people don't even have this opportunity to vote. And if we all have a duty to participate. We should not sit back and be critical of anything that happens in our government if we're not participating in the process. So we all have an obligation to go out tomorrow. And, you know, I'm trying to build one Bridgeport. There's 22,000 unaffiliated voters. There's almost 5,000 Republicans. Together, we can really make this one Bridgeport, because it's not about a party affiliation when you start talking about local in Bridgeport. We all live here every single day, and the laws that we need to be governed by are in the city hall, and they're through our city council and through our mayor. And I think it's time for us to come together and really create a city that is for everyone, that's inclusive.
Talking about building bridges, Marilyn, I had Michael Garron on the show a couple of weeks ago after you and him apparently had a chat over a cup of coffee. What was that chat like? Is it true that there were overtures to John Rodriguez to step aside and give up his ballot line to you? I had him on the show. He smiled about that. We talked about it. He said no way. But what would your message be to unaffiliated? Well, you just gave the unaffiliated message. But what about to Republicans in the city?
So there's not enough Republicans in Bridgeport to take over the seat. And so the option is Marilyn Moore to work together between the Republicans and the unaffiliates and the Democrats. My conversation with Mike was about the old Bridgeport that we all know that have been here forever, and then building a new Bridgeport. But we only could do that if we're working together.
What is the old Bridgeport in your mind? What is that?
Yeah. Well, the old Bridgeport is the factories and plenty of jobs that you could, as Senator Gomes has said, you could leave a job in the morning and go get another job in the afternoon. That's not the old bridge. That's the old Bridgeport. Now we need to build a Bridgeport that's transparent, that's easy to do business with, that has the right zoning, has the right process in City Hall for people to get permits to do the work, and to build a relationship with the businesses that everybody has an equal opportunity to come here and start a business, big or small or medium sized. We need to have a level playing field to really build Bridgeport, to build it back up to the great city that it once was. I love Bridgeport. I've been here my life, entire life. I'm not leaving, but I would like to see Bridgeport start to really raise its head and become something that our kids will want to come back to after they finish college. You know, I was up at Sacred Heart University this morning because they registered 600 voters.
Mm-hmm.
And the mayor had a meeting with them. Well, that meeting should have taken place at the beginning of the year, and it should take place every year with the president and with the city council and with the mayor on how we're going to work together with these new residents. As one young lady brought out, she's not just a student. They're not just students. They are residents, and they live here, and we have to figure out how do we work together and what are going to be the guidelines. So the people who live in those neighborhoods and the people who come here to go to school and are going to stay here 3 years, how do we all live together that everybody has fair and equitable treatment and that everything is transparent and that they're welcome to come here?
When I have asked Mayor Ganim on this program about your allegations, Marilyn, saying that, you know, there's cronyism here in Bridgeport, you've got to, quote unquote, you know the right people to really get things going, he kind of denied that, said that's not true. What's your reaction to that?
Well, I heard Mario Testo say there is a machine in Bridgeport. I heard him say that at his DTC rally last night for Mayor Ganim. And a machine means there's a certain way that you operate. And the way they operate here is you got to go see Mario if you want to get anything done in the Bridgeport. And then when you don't have it, slows the process down. And that's not me saying that. That is developers, that is small businesses crying out for help, saying I would come to Bridgeport and do business, but it's so hard to do business here because of that. And, you know, I represent all of Trumbull and a part of Monroe. And I've watched the development happen all around us except for Bridgeport. And when I talk to people about why are businesses, why did you do in Trumbull on the outskirts and not Bridgeport, they said because it's so hard to do business in Bridgeport. That's what they say. That's not what I say. And they are the ones who are not coming to Bridgeport with their businesses.
Were you surprised that you got the endorsement from the Connecticut Post?
I'm in a love-hate relationship, which I think is very healthy with the Connecticut Post. And I think that's fair reporting, that it's not all one-sided. But they saw me as the only really viable person to be able to win this election, and I agree with them. And they've endorsed me for my Senate seat, so I wasn't surprised. But considering I'm a write-in, we're going to make history tomorrow. I will be the first person of color. I will be the first write-in person to win. And we will win because we're going to be united with the Democrats, the Republicans, and the unaffiliated voter. That is a new Bridgeport, and that is the Bridgeport that's going to move this city to where it needs to go. We need to have this continually, and this can't be the place where we begin. This is the place where we just begin and nothing else happened. This is the place for us to begin and start doing things the right way and being inclusive to the residents and the businesses who are here and the new people who want to come in here to live, and to work really hard and intentionally to make Bridgeport all that it can be.
Marilyn, no matter what happens tomorrow, and we wish everyone luck here of all parties here on the show, no matter what happens, Marilyn, 4 years from now, there will be another election. You might be involved. Who knows? But we will still have the specter, the shadow, I should say, of the absentee ballot situation to whatever. Do you think any real changes will be made and could be made between now and the next mayoral race?
Well, I tell you, I did have a bill before GAE, that's the General Administration Committee, to ask for a magistrate to come down to Bridgeport for our election. I actually had a bill. The bill didn't get called. I think there are some things that we could do. I really don't believe that people who are working on campaigns should be handling ballots or applications. And I also don't think that we should be harvesting or anybody should be picking up 100 ballots. I'd like to see any building with 20 people or more have someone come there from League of Women Voters or someone who's not biased or associated with a political party to go in and do that and monitor the process. And that would be fairer. Because when you look at the list of where the absentee ballots are coming from, Palisades Avenue had hundreds, which means someone went there and handed out applications and brought them back. And I don't think that the seniors should be intimidated into voting for anybody, but they should be able to vote the way they want to vote. And it doesn't always have to be absentee ballots. I gave a lady a ride from the grocery store today to downtown to the Barnum House, and she said she normally goes to the polls. But because they were doing absentee ballots, she did absentee ballots. Mm-hmm. She said, I could have gone to the polls. So we've got to get back to understanding why someone should do an absentee ballot versus someone going to the polls. And I think we can do that in the legislature. And this just isn't happening in Bridgeport. But Bridgeport has been the most blatant city in the state on how they harvest ballots from one election to another.
Marilyn, thank you. We appreciate it. And we'll be in touch. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks. Bye-bye. Yep, Marilyn Moore. There you go. So, folks, you will see a space if you want to vote for her tomorrow. There's a space to write her name in the Bridgeport ballot. John Rodriguez, the Republican, his name will be on the ballot already, as will incumbent Democratic Mayor Joe Ganim. So thanks once again to Marilyn Moore. And we hope with our interviews here of Ms. Moore, Mr. Ganim, and Mr. Rodriguez, we've had them on at least twice each, I think, all three of them, and it'll run up to the campaign. So hopefully we've done our part, and you will go and vote tomorrow, no matter, like Marilyn said, no matter who you vote for. Get out there and vote, and let's get that turnout number up, all right? All right, we're at 203-333-9422, 203-333-WICC. Oh, it's the day before the election. I love Election Day. It's part of the reason I got into this business, and I'm sure it's part of the reason our next guest got into his line of work, our buddy Brian Lockhart from Curse Connecticut Media and the Connecticut Post. Brian, how are you?
I'm good, Paul. How are you?
I'm soaking it in, buddy. We're doing okay. Well, it's T-minus a few hours till Election Day tomorrow. Just had Marilyn Moore on. I had the mayor on last week, had John Rodriguez on a few days before that. And, Brian, they're all kind of sticking to their concert set here. You know, not too much changing in the last few days here. What do you think?
Everybody's going to win. They're all going to win, right?
You know, Brian, it's like the first day of spring training, right? Isn't that how it works? Now, listen, you've been coming, and your stuff is great. I use it on the air all the time here. Has anything really surprised you on the campaign trail or not?
Oh, geez. I mean, at this point in the election, is there anything surprising? Mm-hmm. If the Supreme Court today decides to just totally throw a wrench in this,
yeah,
and order a new primary, I guess that would probably be the biggest surprise at this point.
And do they have to make that by 5 o'clock today, or is there a deadline on that?
Well, they're doing the oral arguments at 2.
Okay, so they're underway.
I mean, the oral arguments are happening right now. My colleague Ken Dixon is there up in Hartford, so I believe the expectation is that they would make some sort of decision possibly today.
Wow.
Although that would just I don't honestly even know how that would work. We were talking about that. I don't know how it would work because there are a lot of candidates who are on the ballot tomorrow who have nothing to do with this. You know, council candidates, Board of Ed candidates, People who aren't, you know, they're linked perhaps to Joe Gamm or they're linked to Marilyn Moore, but there have been no allegations lobbed against their campaigns or their use of AB. So, you know, would we hold an election tomorrow? Would we hold an election for everybody but the mayoral candidate?
Yeah.
I have no idea.
I could see the court coming and saying, okay, everybody still vote, but when you, you know, at the polling place, tell them the mayor's votes don't count? Wow. So the line basically, and no disrespect to Mr. Rodriguez, but, you know, the line here, Brian, between Marilyn Moore and Joe Gannum. Joe Gannum says, look what I've done for the city. She doesn't have a plan. Marilyn Moore, who I just spoke to last half hour, said, listen, we need a change. I'm a change. I'm not Joe Gannum. Is that the way you think this whole thing is going to play out in the mind of voters?
I do. And part of that is, you know, and Marilyn has kind of been dinged for this over the course of the campaign. I don't know if she has really established a real platform in terms of sort of a detailed, here's what I would do. Here's what I'll do for economic development. Here's what I'll do for education. Here's what I'll do for quality of life issues. Here's what I'll do for the police department. I do think it is more of a, she isn't, I'm not Joe Gannum. I'm more of an independent. I don't have the ties to, I listened to the interview, you know, I don't have the ties to Mario Testa. I don't have the ties to the party machine. A vote for me will be a vote for kind of this clean, this idea of this clean slate. I do think that's what it's come down to. And, you know, whether that is by, I don't know if that's by design, if that's by she just has not run as good of a campaign as she might have. But they're, it's just there's a lot of details lacking there in terms of policy stuff, you know. And Joe Gannum obviously has a record, so he'll say, "Well, I've done a decent job. Things can always be improved." He has certainly gone around. I think he recognizes his vulnerabilities because the last few weeks it seems like he's been offering voters everything that they want to hear. He has heard complaints that taxes are too high, so suddenly he came up with this mysterious plan that in the next two budgets, he's going to find a way to lower taxes. Oh, and by the way, he's also going to find more money for education, which is another area where he is vulnerable and where people have been complaining. Now, how he's going to lower taxes and find money for education, I mean, I've sat through a couple budget seasons in Bridgeport, and it's very difficult to find money for either of those things, let alone those two things together. But yes, I think your premise is correct. I think it's people who are tired of him will back more. People who think maybe they're not totally satisfied with him, but they think he's done some decent stuff, and they think that if he knows what he's doing, he has a lot of experience, they'll send him back. I think that's what it comes down to.
As we spend a few more minutes here with Brian Lockhart, Connecticut Post, Hearst Connecticut Media, covering politics in Bridgeport and the election, we think, tomorrow for mayor. We'll keep an eye on what the state Supreme Court does. Brian, you probably heard, as you said, you listened to the interview, Marilyn Moore said a mailer went out to, what'd she say, 22,000 Bridgeport voters, the unaffiliateds here in the city. That's a pretty good chunk of unaffiliateds. Now, Brian, you and I both know if you're unaffiliated, it doesn't mean you don't lean one way or the other. But I don't know, do you think she has a way, could there be inroads made there? What do you think the unaffiliated voter is looking for in the city?
If they are unaffiliated because they don't want to be part of the quote-unquote Democratic machine, then she has given them something to look for. But again, you know, I want to emphasize, I mean, I know she sounded very confident and she said, I think we got this, but it's a big challenge. It's just a big challenge. I mean, you got to remember Joe Gannum, he's the incumbent. He's got the name recognition. He's got the resources. He is on top of the ballot. I know that her campaign, she had said last week she's going to have, I think, 122 volunteers, I guess, supporters at all the different polling places outside, I assume, explaining to people how to vote for her, reminding people to do it.
Which you can do outside a certain perimeter. What is it, 75 feet or something like that?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. But you also have to remember, too, Joe Gannum has a slate. He has all these city council members, all of these Board of Ed people who were endorsed also by the town committee. And so when they're knocking on doors and they're promoting themselves, they're also kind of carrying his message, you know. So there's a lot to be said about coattails. and that top ballot line on the ballot, Maryland is not on it. You got to go all the way to the bottom. You got to write her name in. You got to fill in the write-in candidate bubble. And that's a really big challenge. Will she have more luck than the average write-in candidate? I absolutely believe so. You know, some of the write-in candidates, we have three other write-in candidates, and they are not well known.
Mm-hmm.
They do not have resources. They do not have campaign infrastructure. They entered this race a couple weeks ago. She's correct that she got a lot of free publicity out of this whole absentee ballot battle. And so she is not your average write-in candidate, and she is a state senator, so she does have some name recognition. I would still just based on history, based on politics, I would still have to say that Joe Ganim definitely has the advantage going into tomorrow. I would be more surprised by a Ganim loss than I would be by a Ganim win.
Brian Lockhart, what happens? How about this scenario? In what some people would say would be an upset, you know, Marilyn Moore comes up with the win. Joe Ganim is defeated. Yet, as you say, a lot of the Ganim support, a lot of the down ticket, still ends up on the city council. Then the dynamic dictates who still represents the quote-unquote machine in Bridgeport. What name or two or three, if in fact Mario Testa makes good on his promise to resign, as Marilyn mentioned, that would put Marilyn Moore in the mayor's office. And would there be any opposition? Who would be the person that she would have to do business with, quote-unquote?
Well, it actually, something like that, that kind of scenario happened about 4 years ago. I believe Ganim was elected, but the majority of the city council people who were elected or reelected had been Bill Finch supporters in the primary. And, you know, and I wrote some of those stories. There's that initial kind of distrust and sort of learning to get along and that kind of stuff. But at the end of the day, they are all they're Democrats,
mm-hmm.
unless a Republican or two sneaks on the council tomorrow. At the end of the day, they're Democrats. They will get along. I mean, Marilyn, yes, she will say she's an independent Democrat, but they're still Democrats. It's different from if you had suddenly a Republican mayor, if John Rodriguez pulled off a miracle tomorrow and he won the day and it was a Republican mayor and a whole bunch of Democrats on the council. It would be a different dynamic. I don't think things are going to come screeching to a halt. I think they're all going to learn to work together. There will be council members who work better with her than others. There will probably be some friction. But again, they are all from the same party. Maybe some of them are from the machine, some of them aren't, but they are all Democrats. So you would expect them policy-wise to agree on a lot of the same stuff.
Brian, finally, any other storyline other than the major one, the mayoral race here between the three big candidates, is there any other storyline we should look for tomorrow in the Bridgeport numbers or maybe from any surrounding towns? I mean, is there any other thing that you're going to kind of watch out of the corner of your eye that's kind of fascinated you?
Yeah, I mean, for Bridgeport, there's a couple council races. You know, typically the primaries in Bridgeport often are the general election.
Yeah.
Whatever Dems prevail in the primaries fairly handily win the elections tomorrow. One of the races to keep an eye on is Maria Pereira. Maria is currently a member of the school board. She's an activist. She's an individual that a lot of people in Bridgeport love to hate or a lot of people celebrate because she's very in your face. She is very, some people find her difficult to get along with. Other people love her because they feel that she tells it like it is and she's willing to shake things up when it comes to the machine, Joe Ganim. She is not allied with Marilyn Moore. She ran her own successful petition candidacy in the primaries. And so for all intents and purposes, unless something odd happens tomorrow, she has a seat. She's heading to the city council. And she has a reputation for being disruptive on the Board of Ed and for asking a lot of questions on the Board of Ed. And I think some of the council incumbents are very concerned about her. And that's going to be a very interesting dynamic. She's also, though, running for her Board of Ed seat. So if she – I believe – I haven't followed that as closely as my colleague Linda Lambeck, who follows the Board of Ed. But I believe if she wins both tomorrow, Maria will have a choice. Go on the council stay on the Board of
Ed.
Oh,
so she cannot. So she cannot do both.
I believe she cannot.
Okay.
She is someone to watch, and I guarantee you that there are people on the council that are very nervous about her coming in because she could really, even though she's one voice, she can really shine a spotlight on a lot of things, and she can really kind of disrupt things there for them. You know, another race is there's a councilman incumbent, Kyle Langan.
Yeah.
He's been endorsed by the Working Families Party. He lost his primary, so you have an incumbent. He's a freshman. He was an anti-Ghanem guy, pretty outspoken. He lost his primary. He's now running as a Working Families candidate. So it'll kind of be interesting to see if he manages to survive this or not. I would say those are kind of the two key races to keep an eye on.
Great. Brian Lockhart, thanks, buddy. We'll be in touch maybe later in the week. You can put a post-game spin on this for us. Thanks, Brian. Appreciate it.
Sounds good, Paul. Thanks.
Appreciate it. Bye-bye. Brian Lockhart, Connecticut Post, Hearst Connecticut Media. He and Ken Dixon and the whole crew down there following local politics. Gotta love it. So the election tomorrow in Bridgeport, we think. And we'll keep an eye on what the state Supreme Court may say. And again, like Brian said, the oral argument started almost 2 hours ago, so we shall see. Can you imagine? Oh, can you imagine if the Supreme Court says, okay, the elections go on tomorrow in Bridgeport, except for the mayor? Jeez.
You're listening to Connecticut Today with Paul Pacelli on WICC 600.
And thank you so much for that. We do appreciate it. 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. That is us here on the radio at WICC 600, online at WICC600.com. Teen violence, gang violence, youth violence, we read about it all too often right here in Connecticut, especially in the Bridgeport area, southwestern Connecticut, and Bridgeport also in New Haven, Hartford. We had that ugly story over the weekend, late last week, actually, and then over the weekend, about how a 15-year-old in Chicago is now being held regarding some gang violence. It ended up getting a little girl, a 7-year-old girl in Chicago, shot in the neck while she was out trick-or-treating in a little bumblebee costume the other day. So as much as we try to get away from this, it's all around us nationally and especially here in the Connecticut area. Want to get a little perspective on this. Our next guest is the executive director for the Southwest Gang Information Center. He teaches in the criminal justice program at Western New Mexico University, specializing in crime and minorities. New book, Violence in America, How Do We Save Our Children? Joining us right now, author and instructor Joseph Kolb. Joe, hi. Paul here at WICC. How are you today?
I'm doing well, Paul. Thank you for having me today.
Well, Joe, thank you. Appreciate that. Your area of expertise that you teach on the college level, what are the precise micro areas that you look at in your academic study here of this problem of teen, youth, and gang violence?
We see a couple things, but what I'd actually like to, excuse me, Paul, is take it a step even further.
Sure.
In that I have my feet in both worlds, where I'm not only on an academic level, but I'm also work in corrections here in New Mexico as well. So I see the academic element of it as well as the aftermath of when things ultimately fall apart. Me being in my early 60s, I see the really deterioration of so many social and moral fabrics in our society that, you know, at one point were standard, you know, family rules, regulations, expectations, accountability. We don't have any of that anymore. And I think, you know, our kids really have a hard time of discerning what's right from what's wrong nowadays, and the fact that a lot of times they, you know, do things for their own selfish needs or the byproduct of their environment. And I think more times than not, it's many times environmentally related.
You know, Joe, you mentioned the word, you know, you mentioned the word family in there and upbringing and what people take out of that. Are you ever criticized, as some people are, when you mention the family unit and what an intact family brings in trying to quell this? Because I know sometimes in society, Joe, if we bring that up, we're suddenly being puritanical. Well, not everybody can have an intact family. That doesn't make kids bad or teens bad. I don't think that's what you're saying.
No, not in the least. In fact, you know, within my own family, I have single mothers, but, you know, and they do an incredible job. But what it does also require within that environment is a stable support mechanism. So where there's one element of the equation, a father, for instance, that's absent, other people do need to fill that void. Whether it's within the family or, you know, something constructive, either a church organization or social organization, that, you know, the single parents in society today struggle immensely, mm-hmm. you know, just to be able to afford a cost of living, let alone anything beyond that, is exhausting. So, you know, you look at the circumstances in our challenge socioeconomic environments, like you expressed the incident in Chicago. But, you know, here in New Mexico, we're one of, if not the poorest state in the country. So mm-hmm. we deal with the same socioeconomic stressors, you know, no money, parents have to work. Then you bring add to the equation if there's substance abuse involved, you know, so it's a lot of our kids don't even have a fighting chance, oftentimes even out of the womb.
Yeah, you know, Joe, you read also, and I've had police tell me this here and around Connecticut and other spots where they say, you know, unfortunately, as you say, Joe, when that family unit isn't there, right, when it's not tight and bright around the kid, the son, the daughter there, the teen boy or girl, you know, the gang, the street gang, sometimes these organized gangs, they gravitate to them for support, for a sense of belonging, correct? And a sense of having people around them who like them for some reason.
Well, absolutely. It becomes a surrogate family. And, you know, this dynamic has played out for decades. It's not a new phenomenon. Mm-hmm. What is new is the weaponry and the motivations that are behind it, the behavior. I mean, we've had gangs in this country since before the Civil War. So the dynamic in itself isn't new. But what is new is, you know, again, we can debate, you know, gun legislation and all of these other social issues. But when you look at it, many times it comes down to a couple things. Is low self-esteem that hope, you know, they hope the gang will help build up. But unfortunately, oftentimes that's a false sense of security, because when push comes to shove, when these kids get arrested, the gang members disappear. There's no support. And then there's the access to weapons. And, you know, we could talk about all of the gun control regulations mm-hmm. possible, but the people who shouldn't have guns will always be the ones who can get guns.
Mm-hmm. When you, Joe, Joe, I'm sorry. When you talk to, you say you do some stuff in corrections as well. When you talk to, if you do, gang members who are inside, what do they tell you? Do they express any remorse at all, or do they look on the gang, as we just said, as maybe they thought they would care for them? What do you hear from them?
The younger that they are, no, it's not that dynamic. When they're young, they feel that they're earning a badge of honor within their community. You know, wow, I got to go to jail. Maybe I'll go to prison. Then I can join a prison gang and so forth. But the old ones who I speak with, the majority of them will say, I just wasted my life away. You know, they often write to their kids and their kids write to them. And that's often heart-wrenching where, you know, a kid won't have a father for 25 years because they got sent away on a murder charge or a kidnapping charge or something like that, even a drug charge. So that also perpetuates that cycle of parentless families. Mm-hmm. And that's been one of the arguments of the some of the strategies in the drug war.
And we are talking about gangs, teen violence, teen crime. The name of the book, Teen Violence in America, How Do We Save Our Children? The author, Joseph Kolb, who is an instructor in criminal justice at Western New Mexico University, also with corrections experience as well. Joe, if there's a parent, a grandparent, an aunt, an uncle, a guardian listening to us right now here in Bridgeport, Connecticut, or listening to us, you know, a few miles away in New Haven or Hartford or down further south in Fairfield County or up into Waterbury, what are the warning signs you would mention to them, Joe, as to things that may cause them to seek further information from their kids? What should they be watching out for?
Sure, Paul. I mean, there's a multitude of things, but what makes it a challenge is obviously the age group that we're already dealing with. Once you get into your teenage years, people typically, the kids, we all have gone through our rebellious periods or, you know, being antagonistic, being aloof, whatever you want to call it. So it's really hard to discern, but, you know, anything that would cause alarm would be coming home and stressing. If we're looking at a gang model, for instance, looking at a kid wanting to wear a certain color all the time or have accents or accessories that are always a certain color, a blue or red or things like that. If they want to get a tattoo or if they start doodling either on their school books or even on their hands or arms, like how kids do in school, anything that may be related to a particular number, like a 13 or something like that, rebellious behavior, getting into more and more trouble, having friends maybe over that they were all wearing the same color or they have the same marking or something like that.
Joe, is there a historical perspective on colors here for gangs? That's always fascinated me. Is there anything you could tell us about that?
All different gangs will have different colors. So, you know, and then what they'll also do too is have, they'll gravitate towards sports teams that represent the icon of their gang. So let's say, for instance, MS-13, has gained significant notoriety.
Yeah.
So we'll use that. Now, what we also have to do to preface that is the FBI has identified over 33,000 gangs in the country. So it's impossible to put a finger on one. So MS-13, for instance, is notorious for wearing blue. That's their color. And they'll have tattoos that may just say MS-13, or they may just have a 13. But this could also be confused with the Mexican Sereno gang, which has similar markings. But the other things, for instance, with MS-13 is icons that are associated with horns. So they're known to wear Chicago Bulls attire. So now up in the Northeast, you know, it'd be kind of odd to have Chicago Bulls attire.
Yeah.
So, you know, that you see quite a bit. What they've also resorted to is wearing the Michael Jordan sneakers.
Yeah.
So if you look at the iconic Jordan silhouette that's typically on sneakers.
Yeah, where he's slam dunking. He's in the middle of the air. Yeah.
But if you flip that upside down, it looks like horns.
Really?
So these are all... Yeah, these are all things that people may want to be looking for. But, you know, by and large, you know, most of the kids aren't going to be gravitating totally towards an MS-13, for instance. You know, my concern that I bring up quite extensively in the book is just the what appears to be random acts of violence. I mean, I talk about kids who have access to guns and will go and randomly shoot, for instance, homeless people.
Yeah.
I mean, we had multiple instances in Albuquerque where, you know, bands of kids would go around beating homeless people.
Well, we had that case here. You know, Joe, there was a case in New York, and I'm sure you heard of it, where there was a case in New York not too far from us, maybe 50, 75 miles down the road, where you had these gang members in New York who attacked this kid in the middle of New York, and I think they hacked him to death.
Yeah, that was the Trinitarios gang.
Okay.
That happened up in the Bronx, and I'm very familiar with that case because I knew one of the prosecutors. And what happened with that case, the poor kid was in a bodega in the Bronx, and the Trinitarios, which is a Dominican-based gang, thought that he was having a dalliance with one of their members, or there was something alluded to with a sex video.
Yeah.
They literally, and the kid's name was Junior Guzman. He was a 15-year-old kid. They literally dragged this kid out of the bodega and hacked him to death with a machete on the sidewalk in the Bronx.
It's amazing. In New York City, supposedly, Joe, civilized society, and it got enough coverage, thank God, that, you know, these guys were caught. But they've been defiant, and they literally hacked this kid up. And the poor kid, Joe, as I remember, he wanted to be a police officer or go into law enforcement.
Yep, he did. He was actually, I think, a junior, and I forgot what the NYPD calls it, but he was like a cadet type of a student. So it's terrible. But, you know, I mean, the other things we look at are those random acts of violence for no other reason than a kid says he's bored. Or, you know, we look at now the mass shooters. I mean, unfortunately, Connecticut has Sandy Hook, you know, hanging around its neck forever now. So Adam Lanza wasn't in a gang.
No.
So what drove him to his thing?
Now,
you know, his heinous act.
Yeah, we have about a minute left here. So put yourself, if you can, to the moment of parents or guardians of a kid who's in a gang and unfortunately may end up in corrective protection, custody, whatever, as a juvenile or an adult. What can be done? I'm sure you've seen cases where some of these guys and gals have turned their lives around, but what's the road to that? In about the 90 seconds we have left.
Okay, quick and down and simple, you got to love your kids. And don't be ashamed to show your love for your kids. Not indulge them, not spoil them, you know, because sometimes saying no is more valuable than actually is more valuable sometimes than indulging them. Hug your kids. Don't be ashamed to show your kids affection. But also, by the same token, you know, they need to learn to be accountable for their actions. Don't turn your kids into victims. We've turned into a victimization culture where everybody's a victim. We've lost that ability to be resilient in the face of adversity. So that's something that's very important to teach the kids. And always teach them that no matter what path they go down or decide or choose to go down, there's always options. And they have to be shown that. And then last but not least, parents have to lead by example. You can't tell a kid to be good and stay away from drugs and gangs if you're sitting around the house getting high yourself.
Yeah. The name of the book, Teen Violence in America, How Do We Save Our Children? The author, Joseph Kolb, K-O-L-B. Joe, I would imagine available at all the popular sites, correct?
Yep. Barnes & Noble and Amazon has the book. And, you know, I really encourage people to take a look at it.
All right, Joe, thank you. Joe Kolb, have a great rest of your day. Joe, we appreciate the time. Thank you.
Thanks for your time, Paul.
Thanks. Bye-bye.